last Saturday, that's a week ago yesterday, I was a participant on a panel for one of the workshops offered by our New Hampshire-Vermont District Unitarian Universalist Conference held over in Keene. The workshop was titled Diverse Pathways in One Movement, and the organizers of it decided to get four spokespersons for four religious, spiritual, or philosophical components to go in to make up contemporary Unitarian Universalism. They didn't say that those were the only four. Those were the four strains that they selected. My friend and now retired colleague in the UU ministry, the Reverend Robert Singhouse, spoke for Buddhism and for his participation in UU Buddhist Fellowship. Another friend and colleague in the ministry, the Reverend Ken Clark, spoke for liberal Unitarian Universalist Christianity. A member of the Burlington, Vermont UU Church, whose name escapes me, but she spoke very articulately for paganism and for earth-based spirituality and told about how that stance helps her define her larger identity as a Unitarian Universalist. And yours truly, dear, was the humanist in the bunch. Now, the first thing that struck me that morning was the number of people who attended this event. There were four other equally attractive, or so they seemed to me, workshops being offered at the same time, and yet I would say about two-thirds of the people who attended that conference, the whole conference, showed up for this workshop. That kind of a turnout alone was a telling statement for me about the interest in matters of belief and theology and spiritual practices within our liberal religious movement today. The second item of note for me was a more personal one. It was the question of how did I wind up being the designated humanist in this mix? I hesitated to take on that role at first because while I have no problem claiming that label for myself, the term humanist does not fully speak to my overall life stance or my religious and philosophical outlook. But my hesitation was due to more than just a slight quibble over terminology. It was also related to my sabbatical experience as minister in residence at one of our UU theological schools and some of the conversations that I was having with some of the students there who are preparing now for the UU ministry. Because in the course of those conversations, I would occasionally hear references made to, quote, old guard humanists. Now, the phrase was sometimes spoken in trepidation, as in, how am I going to deal with the old guard humanists when I'm a minister of a congregation? I want to speak of matters of spirituality or maybe use prayer and meditation, lights and candles, and maybe even, refer to God now and then. You know, what's going to happen? I'm going to have these old guard humanists at my throat. Or it might be something like, well, I really like what our current UUA President Bill Seifert is saying about bringing a language of reverence into contemporary Unitarian Universalism, and I'll bet he's sure taking a lot of flack from the old guard humanists. So it was in the midst of these kinds of conversations that I get this email from one of the district conference planners saying, would you be the humanist on our theological diversity panel? And I start to wonder, okay, just who's trying to tell me what here? Am I now somehow officially been moved to the ranks of the old guard? I mean, my friend Bob Senhouse is 15 years older than I am, and he gets to be the Buddhist. I figured maybe I should show up at this workshop and wear a t-shirt with the letters OGH, stenciled across there, old guard humanist. Well, I didn't, and I didn't need to. I wasn't surprised at all that the four of us who were on that panel found far more areas of compatibility with one another than we did differences. But I'm still mulling over in sort of this post-sabbatical mode that I'm still in some of the attitudes and feelings I heard about this thing called humanism from at least some of our future UU ministers and just what that might portend. So I decided I would let you in on some of my mullings this morning. I believe I said when I came back from sabbatical, I was trying to use that experience to inform at least hopefully some of my sermons. Because I think what was really coming out of those conversations, the discussions I was having, was over how to best deal with some areas of resistance that there still are in our UU congregations to the use of religious language, to the heightened emphasis upon spirituality and spiritual practices and expressions in our congregations, to the ways in which our worship services clear across our denomination, and I noticed this too as I got a chance to travel around a little bit, they have become much more ritualized in the past 15 to 20 years. And I think this is all a positive trend, but I'm also aware that sometimes negative reactions or reactors to this direction that we are now taking do get categorized, fairly or not, under the general designation of old guard humanism. Well, these perceptions that these students have an interest in, whatever the reality behind them might be, and there is some reality there. I have heard within some of our congregations expressions like, look, I'm a humanist, I'm uncomfortable hearing talk about spirituality or with any kind of God language or offering any type of prayer, and you think you could at least go a little easier on the meditation, the candles, and the drum beating. Well, I'm a humanist too, but I don't quite share those sentiments, at least not quite as fervent. One of the many things I enjoyed about my sabbatical was that it did give me an opportunity to do some personal inventory about my own religious or philosophical or theological underpinnings, how I arrived at them, how they've changed over the years during my journey in and through the UU ministry. And it was really good to be able to just kind of sit back. One of the things I really liked about the sabbatical was I could kind of sit back and ponder on those things and let my mind go where it would without thinking about what the sermon was going to be for that upcoming Sunday. To kind of be outside that mode for a while was very good. And since I was living just a few blocks from the actual building where some 25 years ago the meeting of our association's ministerial fellowship committee was held, at which I was granted UU ministerial status, coming over from a mainline Protestant denomination, these kinds of musings that I was doing in that neighborhood there did have something of a going back to where it all began quality to them. As I'm sure I've shared on other occasions, it was in the early to mid-1970s that I became very interested in and captivated by what was loosely termed the humanistic psychology movement. I had been, for lack of a better phrase, a church guy all my life, up to this time, mid-30s, and to step into and participate in certain settings where men and women were quite meaningfully engaging with life and dealing with some of its weightiest matters from both the personal to the global, apart from any conventional religious or theistic frame of reference, was quite revealing to me. And I decided this thing called humanism made the most sense to me. And after considering a few other career change possibilities, which I figured that was going to visit upon me at that point, I opted for the Unitarian Universalist ministry. Much more important, they opted for me. And I have to say, nearly three decades later, that I am still dancing with the one that brought me here. That much was clear to me during my sabbatical reflections. But I'm also aware, as well, that the dance has changed over the years. I've added a few steps here. I've let a few others go. So let me just waltz off in that direction for a few moments. Well, since I've been bandying the term humanism around for close to 10 minutes now, some semblance of a definition on my part would probably be nice. Humanism is one of those words that can be defined about as many ways as theism. A humanist, talking about being a humanist, is about as many ways of being a humanist as there are believing in God, so I'll give you my angle on it here. And mine's fairly simple. I believe we are living the only lives we have and will have in the only world and universe in which we are granted to live in. And I believe this natural world and universe, with our still quite limited knowledge of it, is all we need for meaningful human living. The original title of our closing hymn for today, which we're not doing just yet, is called Earth is Enough. In his poetic way, the author, Edwin Markham, is saying that we need no other realm like that of the supernatural, or the supernatural supreme being, to give our lives their fulfillment and their wholeness. It's all right here, for the time that is given to each of us to have it. Our human destiny, for better and for worse, and we certainly know our share of both in the course of human history. But our human destiny, for better and for worse, is in human hands alone. My favorite metaphor for the humanistic life, which I first encountered way back, and I mean way back, in a freshman English class, and did not come to appreciate until several years later, is found in Albert Camus' novel, The Stranger. Camus was a French existentialist philosopher, essayist, and novelist. And the metaphor he offers at the end of this book, at the end of this novel, it seems very stark and it seems very forbidding, but properly understood, it does work. Or it works for me at any rate. In the final chapter of The Stranger, the central character is in jail. He's waiting his execution for a murder he more or less stumbled into committing. And on his last night on earth, he looks out the window of his cell and he can see the stars up in the sky above him, and he says, "I lay my heart open to the benign indifference of the universe." And then the book ends a few paragraphs later as he's let off. Well, that's not exactly the kind of thing I'd use for a children's story here. At first reading, it sounds like a pretty grim and forbidding commentary on life and the human condition. But if you stay with it, and if you unpack it a little bit, you find out that it's really not. For what Camus is saying with this admittedly stark metaphor is that we are all living finite lives, and that we will die, with this time-bound existence. That's what the cell thing is about. But in a world and universe that does have its beauty, the starry night, and that also regards us with what he calls benign indifference. That sounds a little like an oxymoron, but again, if you stay with it, it's not. For it is benign in that there is no one or no thing out there that wishes us any harm. But it's still a world in the universe that in the grand cosmological scheme of things is ultimately indifferent to us. There's nobody here but us chickens, so to speak. Along with all the other sentient beings and living organisms and forms of life with whom we share the beauty of this planet for however long we have to do that sharing. And that does, I feel, state the human condition. And I still dance with that. But I found that this metaphor is a beginning point rather than an end. The denial of anything outside the natural world and universe is where the affirmative search for meaningful living begins. It's where we choose how we will live and share the lives we have, what principles and values we will stand for. It's the place from which the depths of the human spirit are explored and from which the life of the spirit has lived. What has changed for me since this dance of humanism began is how my thinking and living has changed and evolved from that beginning point. For while my initial embrace of humanism, as I briefly tried to define it here, was for the sake of casting off what I felt I could no longer believe, I very quickly learned that human beings do not live by negation alone. In fact, you can't get very far with it at all. To the contrary, we live, we really live by what we affirm and what we embrace. So let me move in that direction. Now, my choice then, in the face of what I have come to understand to be the human condition, is to be a religious person. Which is probably why I have remained in church guy mode over all these years. And I mean religious person in the sense that my UU ministerial colleague, Reverend Patrick O'Neill, has so beautifully and eloquently expressed it in the reading I used earlier. Recall a few of his words again, that being religious has nothing to do with piety or self-righteousness or blind faith acceptance of some proclaimed doctrine, but instead it means a choice to bless the world. The religious person is one who chooses to bless the world, not out of naivete or piety, not out of ignorance of its dangers or denial of its mortality, not out of some robotic allegiance to a faith system, but blesses the world knowing full well that life is hard, and all of us are vulnerable to being lost every day. Patrick continues, "You bless the world by how you choose to live in it. To choose to be a loving person even when you have reason to be bitter. To choose to be a healer even when you have been wounded. To choose to be hopeful even when you have cause to be a cynic. To choose to forgive a hurt. That to me is being a religious person. That's choosing life." That's blessing the world. These are the choices I have tried to make in such an understanding of religion. It's why I call myself a religious humanist. It can be a tough challenge at times, this choosing to bless the world and looking to receive a blessing from it as well. I speak only for myself, my own opinion on this one, but as a citizen of a particular nation in this greater human world community, it is hard not to embrace bitterness and cynicism. And the leaders of my country bungle, as I have seen it, their way and our way into an increasingly horrible and destructive war they did not have to choose. I do pray, in my own way, for the safety of those who have been placed in harm's way and death's way by some terribly misguided, and I think terribly unthinking choices. And yet it remains crucially important in the midst of all this that we continue to find ways to bless the world, because it's the only world we still have. So I know I can give in to bitterness or cynicism and to my fallen more than my healed sight on occasion. That too is part of the human condition. For honest humanism is one that, while it celebrates the human spirit and the possibilities and potentialities of our humanity, it recognizes also that we will at times fall short, sometimes horribly short, of our higher human ideals. But I think whatever our particular life stances may be, Patrick puts forth a call to which I feel we can all respond and at least aspire to when he says, religious persons are those who see clear-eyed the vision of life set before them and who have then the courage to choose to bless the world by how they live. Again, whatever our personal, religious, or philosophical beliefs or spiritual practices may be, I urge that kind of courage for all of us. And I know that for myself, in seeking such a blessing, I have come to feel that I am part of some greater reality than myself. I feel I am related to some reality larger than myself here. It's not a supreme being, but a larger life force or presence, which I can on occasion call God. One more point for today. I try to make this dance of humanism be one that opens me up to the wisdom of a variety of life stances and to the fulfillment that can be found within them, more so than one that casts them aside as irrelevant. In this vein, I have another short reading to share by another of my UU ministerial colleagues. This one, the Reverend Mark Galatini. He's the minister of our UU congregation in Columbus, Ohio. In speaking to the ways in which he draws on a variety of sources, in his own quest to be a religious person, he makes this rather wry observation. Because I use critically understood Bible passages and tout Jesus, many are sure I'm a liberal Christian. Because I chant Hebrew carefully at Jewish-Gentile weddings, not a few assume that I am at least in part Sephardic Jew. Because I extol the insights of biology, chemistry, and physics, and snarl my disdain for astrology, crystals, and everything showing the plane of a rope, many are sure I'm a classic humanist, and a somewhat cranky one at that. Because I quote the sutras and Thich Nhat Hanh, several imagine I flow as a current in Buddha's river. Because I have made babies with the four elements and celebrate the solstices and the equinoxes, I've been roped into the pagan camp. Because I write poems with religious imagery and compose prayers to love, I am often called or dismissed as a mystic. Some visitors to our church are claiming it's spiritual, and others will walk away from the same service saying it lacks any real spirituality. Worse, others damn me as too spiritual. Must have been one candle too many. I never cease to be astonished. Well, I don't touch quite as many bases as Mark does, at least not as definitively as he does. His eclecticism is a little more broad-based than my own. And I know he would agree with me that such eclecticism also does require a critical mind to sort out the wheat from the chaff and the authentic from the nonsensical. But the larger point Reverend Bellatini is making here, with his noted touch of humor, is one I can embrace. A truly enlightened humanism, which I think he demonstrates here, is one that should open us up to the many sources of meaning, to the many possible journeys of the Spirit, and to the many expressions of those journeys. It's for this reason, as I stated back in the beginning of these thoughts, that I found little patience with those with whom I was sharing that panel last weekend. We're all on our our respective journeys of the Spirit in a common accepting setting. I feel these journeys of the Spirit can best take place in a religious community, like the one we are trying to grow here, like the one we welcome new people into this morning. A religious community where the worth and dignity of every human being is affirmed, and where, as a couple of our other UU principals put it, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning can go forward, and where encouragement to spiritual growth is a hallmark. As long as I believe in these kinds of religious communities, and as long as I believe they are possible, then I guess I will keep being a church guy. Well, finally, last word here is I've got a certain amount of mileage out of this dance metaphor this morning. I guess for the sake of truth in packaging here, I should acknowledge that in the real world, or let's say in a world divested of metaphor, I can't dance worth a lick, and I seldom try. Could be a hangover from my early religious upbringing where dancing was frowned upon, who knows. But anyway, I will return to an end this on the metaphorical level. This is a dance that's kept me on my toes over time. It's one that I trust will continue. Now let's see our closing hymn together. We're on the path.